name's Alora Udell, and I'm interviewing Beth Barani. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, absolutely.
Great, great, because new names are always like new words. And I, one of the things that I try to remember for my gratefulness each day is that I can read, and I can write. And it's something that I think is easily taken for granted, because I know I've taken it for granted. So I'd like to know more about your experience with reading and writing, and when was the first time that you really acknowledged that you were a writer, or when, and when you began to write?
Well, I knew I was a writer in a very kind of empowered way at 13, when a teacher, our eighth grade teacher at the small private school, a small Catholic private school in Sonoma, was assigning to us new and interesting writing assignments every week, it seemed. Like, this week, write a poem. And then next week, you're going to write a comedy story. And then the week after that, you're going to write a mystery. And then you're going to write a romance. And then you're going to write and she just kept giving us writing assignments. Very interesting stories, or not stories, you know, how to stand up and give a how-to speech. And she had us doing all kinds of creative projects. And that was because of those assignments, the spark of being a storyteller really bloomed in me, not just from a, I'm going to play around with this, which I had been doing earlier when I was younger, but from a, I can actually do this, because I was doing it for school and having just so much fun with it and exploring and stretching. And it was very certain in me. I was very clear. I'm like, I'm a writer. I knew it at that age. And I had actually written my first story when I was like 8 with my brother about our cats. Speaking of cats. And I remember hand sewing the binding. So I was into book production at a very early age.
That's a lovely story. Did you keep any of that?
I can't find that particular book, but a few years ago, my father found in storage this wonderful little book about this big, and it's staple bound. And it has drawings in it, and it is me and my 3 younger siblings. And you can tell because the sophistication of the drawings varies, because I'm the oldest, and then I was probably about 10 when I made that, and because I can just guess from my ability what I expressed. And I joke and say it's my first anthology, because I've, you know, as an adult, I've done 2 anthologies. I've produced 2 anthologies for other people and been in others, but so I just joke and say, that's my first anthology with my siblings, of course. And I have that on my shelf. And it's just this reminder, like I didn't know it, but looking back, I can see how production oriented I was from a young age. I wanted to create things. I didn't want to, I didn't sit around with the wish. Well, there was a lot of wishes, but I also was doing. So it's really great to see that, you know, yeah.
That's lovely, and this really is what this series is about, the video series. It's about creating and inspiration, you know, inspiration, when you break down the words, inspire. So it's breath, you know, breath, breathing, it's creativity.
Yeah.
And I went to my spiritual center yesterday, and they had a guest speaker, and she was talking about human breaks down to light, body, hue, light, and body in Latin. So I thought about how we're these light bodies, and it, when I think about light bodies, I think about creativity. But the series is about creativity, and also as a writer, maybe you can address that creativity, but also that specific when writer's block comes up, because I know you have written a book on that, and I'd love you to share that. And I believe you're going to offer that as a free gift to our viewers.
Yeah. I was just reviewing what I wrote in that book, and it's really a culmination of tools that I used to go from wishing to be a novelist and then doing it. And there was a big 12-year gap in there. So I woke up as a writer at 13, but I was a student and I was very academically oriented. So eighth grade, what happens? You go into high school and all of my energy and focus went into being a student. And I knew I was on the academic track, and I did. I went to university. And at 18, there I was, far away from home, knowing I was sort of committed to being a student, but also wishing to be a novelist. So, well, I was committed to being a student, and I didn't know how to be a novelist. And it was a very mysterious desire. When a desire sort of plops in your lap, I want to write a novel. You're like, okay, like, you know, I didn't know anything, even though I came from a family of creatives. So my great grandmother was a writer, but she wasn't really the kind of novelist that I want to be. She was more of a activist writer, who really got her start in the 30s with the labor movement and all kinds of things here in the States. But so that was very political, and I wasn't. I knew I wanted to tell rip-roaring good stories, and I didn't know how. And but I came up with all these ways to get writing, because I knew writers write. I learned that from my mom, and she got it from her grandma, the writer. Writers write. So I had been writing all this time in my journal, and when I turned 30, I realized it was time to commit to being a novelist. Through a turn of events that kind of shook my world, I realized I needed to commit to being a novelist or drop the dream. I had been daydreaming and wishing and wanting for 12 years and working in the nonfiction writing space as a journalist and kind of like a feature writer, book reviewer, things like that. So I had some writing chops on me, but writing fiction is so different than writing nonfiction. So, so different. And I can feel it. And I could feel all this fear and anxiety and angst and all these things. So I had to find ways to get moving. I had to find ways to get writing. And for myself, I devised a bunch of different tech tools and techniques purely out of the one piece of information I knew, which was writer's write. And so what am I going to write about? And what I learned, and I only know this now kind of looking back and sort of deconstructing what I did, and also writing about it in Overcome Writer's Block, is that we have to follow our own intuition about what to write. And that I call that being an organic writer. There's an article in the book about that, one of the chapters. And for me, it's very akin to gardening. You know, you plant something, and you plant it by writing about it. Even if the seed is a sentence, if a sentence comes to me, I put it in my journal. And that's all I could do when I was younger. I didn't know how to write fiction. I didn't know how to go from splash of an idea, a man and a woman huddled together on the train, looking in distress. It's midnight. That's all I had. And I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't know how to, you know, I could write the atmosphere. I could write the moment. That's all I could do. And I didn't know how to turn that into a story. So I gave myself 100% permission to write all these little sparks. I call them sparks. And the original subtitle of Overcome Writer's Block was 10 Writing Sparks to Ignite Your Creativity. Because sometimes it's just that little spark that you have to just nurture over the years to eventually become something bigger, a big bonfire, for example.
Yes. I love that visual of sparks and the bonfire. It makes me think of a big event actually that happens in England on, you know, we have bonfire night. I always get confused now, the 5th or the 4th, but I think it's the 5th, November 5th.
Guy Fawkes Day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We celebrate, you know, a revolutionary who could be seen more than that these days. But in a way, I mean, I think, you know, when we go back, even now, but we go back in history, and especially, you know, I'm from Britain. My family's English and Irish. And then when I always think, when people say to you, I'm English, it really is, for me, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, well, we're mutts, you know, because everyone invaded. But in mythology, and actually in history, what we have in Britain is this very old culture, and this culture that, you know, is pre-Christian, that is pagan, and it goes back even further. But, you know, we are celebrating the solstices, and we celebrate the equinox, and so much of that is around fires. Mm-hmm. You know, the fires were lit on Beltane.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, here we are, we're coming into spring. It's we had this beautiful full moon last night.
Yeah.
And I suppose officially the night before, but it was there, and I actually took my granddaughter out to see it, and I was telling her about the full moon and making wishes and saying all these things, but yes, coming back, it's like, it's a creative time. And I think maybe many people feel, I feel it. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's springtime. Mm-hmm. And when you mention gardening, it's mm-hmm. like, this is when the flowers are coming up. This is when we, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully we can really access our creativity. Mm-hmm. And I have a client that one of my coaching students this morning. And, you know, we're all busy in our lives. I mean, if you're not a professional writer, and even if you are, I think, you know, the writer's block definitely will still come up. But if you're not a professional writer, and it's not what you're doing for a living, mm-hmm. there's, what I hear all the time is, I don't have time to write. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So can you share with us when that comes up for you? Like, because you know, you're doing, as we all know, there's always things to do in life.
Absolutely, always things to do. And even so, to be clear with everyone, I make most of my living as a teacher and a writer for novelists. And to be honest to them, to my clients and my students, I have to show up honestly as a novelist, and I don't do it for them. Exactly. Right. I do it for me, because I've learned that I am my primary client. I am my most important client. And I don't really think of myself that way consciously, but I had to make that switch, and it shows up in how I schedule my time. So the whole notion of not having the time is really another way of saying I don't want to put it on my calendar. I have to say, I have to be a little bit direct about that, because we make time to have coffee with a girlfriend, or we make time to go to the manicurist, and it lands on our calendar. These are not things that we just hope will happen. We schedule them. We make dates, right? We make appointments. We are expected to show up on time, and we know how long they'll last. Well, it's the same thing with our writing. So I have to write for my business as well. I write blog posts, landing pages, emails, etc. And I make an appointment with myself. There's a big block of time on the calendar where it says, write newsletter. You know, and so it's a commitment. It's something that I had to learn how to put on my calendar, because I too expected it to just, oh, I have to do this thing. And or it would be more of a panic experience. Like, oh no, I said I would do this thing and I haven't done it. Or the dread of oh God, I have to write a sales page. and now I ask the question, well, what am I hungry for? Because even though I have it on the calendar, I might actually be in the mood for something else in that moment. But I also have made a commitment to myself, for example, today, to work on my book, which I did. And, but first, I had to talk to my friend who I saw at the cafe by chance. It's like, I'm not going to pass up this opportunity to chat with my friend, Nick. And like, we both enjoy having that experience. And it's kind of a willy-nilly. We don't make appointments with each other. So when I see him, I want to chat. And then at some point it was like, okay, I got to get to work. And he's like, yep. Like, he's an actor. He understands, a writer and actor. And it was so lovely to have that internal feeling of like, oh, it's like, now it's time to get to the thing I'm committed to and that particular activity that's up for me next. And it's planned. That helps. Because I know it's coming. And I have a lot to say about this, because one of the things that really trips people up too is the feeling of like overwhelm. Like, oh my God, I have to write this whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? I have to write my newsletter, or I have to write a blog post, or I have to write a proposal. And that can feel overwhelming. Just like, you know, beginning novelists are like, oh my God, I have to write a novel?
Yes.
Yeah, but not all in one day. To remind them, like, it's a moment by moment, word by word, sentence by sentence construction. And if you could write 250 words today, in a year, you would have a book, right? That's sort of the common thing people say. And it's absolutely true. I just wrote 3 books in 4 months. So that didn't happen overnight, guys. That was a sit down day after day, specific goals every day. It wasn't like, I'm going to write the book today. It was like, I'm going to write X amount of words or this scene today. It's a very slow and steady turtle thing.
I love that image of the turtle, but I'm just so impressed that you, did you say 3 books in 4 months or 4 books in 3 months?
3 books in 4 months. Yeah, it's actually a new feat for me. I'm writing a 4-book series, so I'm pausing here, rereading the 3 books, making notes, and then I will dive into book 4 next month. And it's all first drafts. Remember, it's a first draft. It's not perfect. It's way better than my first drafts when I first started 19 years ago. But it's because I know a lot more. But still, they're rough.
Yes, yeah. And that shows a commitment. And you had a couple of pieces in what you said then that really stood out to me. One was the commitment.
Yeah.
And what you said was it's a commitment to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one. And I also feel very strongly that it's a commitment to yourself. I have started to wake up at 4. Well, I set my alarm at 3:45 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
So that I can actually have my tea and be sitting down at my computer at 4 a.m. to write. And, you know, I've had friends and people say, are you crazy?
That's crazy.
And what time do you have to go to bed? And they say, well, really 8:00. I can push it till 9.
Yeah.
But it's, I'm making a commitment to myself that I can write. So that's what I do.
Yeah.
And what also stood out for me is that you said you schedule it. You schedule it on your planner. And I felt that you had these really, really important points, which is, you know, you schedule coffee with a friend and you schedule the manicurist.
Yeah.
And I can so relate to that, you know, it's like scheduling.
Right.
And that's what I realized is, you know, what about if I just, that's what I did in grad school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scheduling, my social life, I said, I'm sorry, I'm in grad school. I'm finishing my thesis. I cannot see you. But what grad school taught me, and just college in general, is you have to schedule time.
Yeah.
And you have to put yourself first. You have to put what you're working, and which is really putting yourself first.
Yeah.
So from hearing that you have written 3 books in 4 months,
uh-huh.
First of all, I'm just like, okay, I'm still working on my novel. How long's it been? Actually, it's not been too long, but I'm still working on it. So that's inspiring because I'm thinking I can get this done. But also, it doesn't sound to me as if you got writer's block. But
I don't have writer's block anymore. Yeah. But I used to.
Okay, yes. So you used to. So you really need to share with us how you overcome writer's block, because it sounds like you have.
Yeah, let me see if I can go back to that place, because
honestly,
the writer's block I had was not about what do I say, but it was about how do I say it. And it was emotional and nonverbal, and it was a lot of worry, and it was a lot of, will anyone like this? What is it? what am I writing? So my very first novel, to put it all in perspective, was I started it 19 years ago, and it took me 5 years to write my very first book. And that was 15 books ago, so just some breadth of time. So I didn't know what I was doing, but I decided to write a novel. And I used a book called The Weekend Novelist by, I think it's Robert Ray, as my guide. Because he breaks it out in 52 weeks, and it's designed for people with day jobs, and if you want to write a novel, and you could follow his guide. And it was very instructive. And I did finish, and it took me 5 years because of life and doubts and worries.
Right.
And for me, there was a time where before I started writing fiction, I was afraid of the voices in my head. Very non-verbally, I couldn't articulate it exactly, but I could just have these flashes of moments of, I want to write a novel, but like this sort of backwards movement of like, oh no, like I'm going to go crazy, really is, you know, was sort of the other side of it.
Right.
So when I committed to writing a novel, because I got rejected from graduate school in journalism, I realized that I had to face this scary thing.
Right.
And it was very hard. I would sit down to write pages, and I had a writing group, and I would have pages due because I knew I needed a deadline, and I knew I needed external accountability. But still, it was so hard. It was excruciating. It was like, I really don't know how to liken it except for I was going to put my stuff in front of a firing squad. And it kind of felt like I was there. But I knew it wasn't me. I knew the words weren't me, but it felt like it was me. So it felt very tender and very vulnerable and very scary. And but all of this was below the surface.
Right.
Because I had committed to the deadline, I was going to turn in pages. And it was just painful to write. And you hear this a lot from writers, even experienced writers who talk about the pain of writing.
Yeah.
And what started turning it around for me was meeting other writers and hearing about their processes, and especially this man who is now my husband, another writer, Ezra, who's very, he just sits down and creates. He's also a songwriter and has written tons of songs, tons and tons of short stories. He was writing kind of like long short stories when we first met at this writing group. And he would just sit down and write. And I didn't really know this about him until we started dating. And I just watched him create. I mean, I was literally in the same room and watched him write and watched him work and watched him transition from decision. I got to work on my book or my story, and then watch him like sit down and start working on it. And it was this ease, and it brought to mind this new awareness, like, oh, you mean it could be that easy? I mean, I don't have to be going through all this angst about the creative process, about what I'm going to say and how to say it, and is this right? And really deep down, am I any good? Like, am I? It's kind of almost deep. It hits that core identity of like, am I even a good person? Like, but I didn't realize that. It was just a struggle. It was just sort of this. The creative work is just wrapped up in my self-identity, and then watching him sort of write a story and then write another story and then write another story, because he's a short story writer and could write a lot faster than me, and I was writing a novel, and I was like, whoa, what if it could be that easy?
Uh-huh.
What if I could just have that lightness when I approach my work?
Right.
It took me a long time to get to that place. I think it took me, the first novel took me 5 years to write. The second novel took me 6 weeks, because finishing a book releases a lot of positive energy. Finishing any big project, right? It releases all this positive energy and also this new found awareness of like, oh, I did it that way, but I don't really like that way. I don't like the topic I was writing about. I don't like the way I wrote that book. I want to choose a completely new topic and a completely new process. And so that I just have this explosion of energy to try something new. And I did. And it was super fun. And that book is also not published. So the first one, obviously not published.
Right.
The second one, also is not published, although it's a story I want to come back to.
Right.
And then the third book, which is Henrietta the Dragon Slayer, which is the first in a three-book series, took me... I actually can't tell you how long it took me to write the first draft, because it was such a labor of love that I just sort of dove into the story. It was based on a three-page story I wrote when I was 20, when I was in that tinkering phase that I didn't know how to make anything go anywhere. And so I was like 33, I think, when I picked it up. And by now, it turned out to be like the third manuscript I'd written. And I just fell into it. I had so much more experience now. I'd written two novels, and it took me actually like 5 years to bring to publication, because I self-published it. But it was such a labor of love. I was no longer caught up in the process, and I was just in the story, learning craft and lots and lots and lots and lots of editing and stuff like that. And really, now I became more in doubt around the craft. Like, how do I write compelling fiction? It no longer became, how do I channel my creativity, which I think had been going on earlier. Like, how do I take what's out here, what's so amorphous, and put it on the page? And it's hard.
It's interesting what you share, because what I'm hearing is the process of writing. When you mentioned how it can be painful, many writers refer to that as this is painful. And for me, it's really painful when I have writer's block, because I know, you know, there's writing that I've done that I'm like, wow, where did that come from? And why can't it come again? But also that it seems as if, and you mentioned like going through the lightness to that, but it also sounds like it didn't come overnight.
Not at all. And I have to say, even now I experience, and I don't call it writer's block anymore. I call it, like, to borrow a term from Stephen Pressfield, a wonderful writing teacher, it's resistance. It's not actually even personal to us as creatives. It's right. This external force kind of pushing against us, that is always there. It's like gravity, actually. And so we don't get angry at it. And so that's where the lightness comes from, right? We don't get angry at it. We accept it. We know that it's part of the process.
Right.
And I think people get all hung up around writer's block thinking it's this bad thing, but actually it's just a force of nature.
Uh-huh.
It's not even us. It's the more we show up in the world, this is how Stephen puts it, Stephen Pressfield, the more we show up in the world, the more there's going to be a bigger force pushing against us.
Right.
You know, Beyonce's life doesn't get easier because she's like the queen bee. Every time she's got it, or Madonna, or, you know, they have to continually lean into their most creative self and talk and whatever they just did. I mean, what Beyonce did, I think it was at the Grammys, I think it was, where she was like the goddess. It was amazing. Mother Earth, goddess.
Right.
How is she going to do something different and amazing, more amazing than that next time?
Yeah.
She will. And it probably is an amazing excavation for her. And then, right? Her truth. We see her truth there. We see her honesty. We see her all out. We don't see, I mean, there's a little gimmickiness, it feels like, sometimes when they throw in some tropes that are all hip-hoppy and everything. But then other times it felt like, oh my God, this woman is just channeling Mother Earth, Mother Goddess Africa, right? I'm like, oh my God, I bow to that. You know, it's amazing. And so as creatives, the more we exercise our creative muscle, we're still always facing the resistance. It's still always going to push against us. And our job is to say, okay, and do the work anyway. And we exercise that muscle of going through that. So I experience it almost every single time I go through a project. And it's like an arc. At the beginning, it's really, really hard. It's hard. And I allow myself an inch to work like a little bit. It's like, okay, today I just write 500 words, because I can feel the pushing against me as I start a new project. But then as I write, and I pick up steam, and today could be a 1,000-word day. Ooh, 2,000. And then for a while, it could be a 3,000-word day. and then on and on. And then sometimes at the end, it becomes halting again because I'm finishing. And the end is its own kind of energy, how to wrap up a story. And then you kind of slow down. And so I could now kind of chart it. It's all about that. And so I really just allow myself to have a short session at the beginning. Like I talk to myself, I coach myself. Like today, all I need to do is show up and make some notes. Like if that's all I can manage, that is okay.
Right.
And that happened. I'm in a rereading phase. And so last week, at the beginning of March, I'm like, I'm going to reread 3 books this week. And then I was like, ugh, the energy just feels like screaming, like, no, you know, there's that scariness again. But now I know it's just kind of part of the process. And so the first time I sat down to work on this project, I just made some scribbles in my little notes here on my iPhone where I keep everything.
Uh-huh.
Just brainstorm whatever's going on. I don't even know what I said. I don't even judge it. But I like put my attention on the project for a short time. And that does something. It's planting that seed, back to the garden metaphor. Just planting. And then it starts percolating. And I walk away from the project for a few days, and then I feel again that hunger. I'm like, oh, I really want to work on this. I really want to work on this. And I start envisioning myself working on it. I could sit on the couch, or I could go to the cafe, or I could be in bed, or, you know, because I'm just rereading. And so I just start playing with these ideas. I don't set my heart on anything, but it's almost like I'm showing myself all the ways in which we can be moving. We, meaning all my creative parts, can be moving on this project. And then it kind of organically happens where Saturday night, I wake up from a nap and I'm like, oh, I'm ready to read my book. So I had it on my Kindle and I started reading. And I look up the clock and an hour later, I'm like, whoa, I was into it. That's great. And then I'm at the cafe on Sunday. I'm like, oh, I'm so ready. And I have my little setup and my little keyboard. And I'm like, oh, I can read and take notes. And I'm like, in it. This is like the worker bee moment. I've kind of transitioned from that beginning reluctance. And I'm now in the worker moment. And same with today. I was like, oh, here we go. Ready to work. You know, and at some point that will peter out. And then I'll be in a new like beginning phase of like, oh, I feel the hardness of the, because I'll be starting book 4 and I have to plan book 4. And I'm like, oh, what am I going to do? And now I know, because I've done it so many times, that angstiness at the beginning of doubt and worry and, oh, right, book 4, it's the finale. It has to be great. And I'm like, and then, okay. That's normal. That's totally normal. And yes, and so I don't let it stop me. Whereas before I would let it go, okay, that's it. I can't do this.
Right.
And now it's like, oh yeah, okay. We're swimming in it. It's like, it's like the beginning of a workout. I run. And at the beginning, sometimes it can feel really great. You're like, oh, I'm finally out. I'm running. And other days it's like, oh, my feet feel like lead. But I know if I just keep going. The energy will start moving more and more through my body, and I'll just feel, I'll relax, I'll take bigger breaths, I'll get out into the open where there's fewer people around me and cars, and I can just kind of just find my stride. So some days are excellent, you find your stride right away, and other days, you know, it's just enough to put one foot in front of the other.
That's a wonderful metaphor, you know, to align it with running and putting one foot in front of the other. It's almost like, it's like life for me. It's like you're putting one foot in the other, in front of the other. But you have some key pieces there, and talking about resistance. You said the author and teacher who says that.
Yes. Stephen with a V, Pressfield, is a great site, stephenpressfield.com. And that is from his book, The War of Art.
Oh, yes. And I have that book. That's funny. Yes. I have that book, and I ordered it recently, and I haven't read it. Yes. And it was a book that was recommended to me. So the other book that was recommended to me was The Perfect Day Formula, which...
What's that again? The Perfect what?
The Perfect Day Formula, and that's Craig Ballantyne. And he's a successful entrepreneur and a writer, and he has a website, early to bed, early to rise, or early to rise, and he gets up at 4. So I I copied his. I was like, okay, I'll try it. like when you were talking about resistance that Stephen Pressfield talks about, what came to mind was what I've heard in the past is what you resist persists. And all but for me, what that made me think about is if I'm resisting something, it's really what I need to do. So if I'm resisting in my writing, I need to move forward. And what I suggest when I'm facilitating a writing group, because I now say I don't teach writing because I'm not teaching anyone how to write. Because I'm very much about write your story, write your unique story. I can't teach you. No one can teach you how to write your story. I could facilitate and coach you how to, as if I'm coming as a reader, what I would like to hear. So if you're writing about when you lived in the ashram in India with your mother, who was from Germany, and you were, you know, you were in Germany before you went to India, what did that ashram look like? So I facilitate. Mm-hmm. So when I suggest when we're writing, and I've given a prompt in my writing class, and you can see that some people just stop, like they just stop. They don't know what else to write. And I always say, just keep writing, even if it's, I don't know what to write. I don't know what to write. And then that it will come.
Yeah.
So on that note, with writing your own unique story. So right now you're writing fiction.
Yes.
But it sounds very much like you have written nonfiction and creative nonfiction. Mm-hmm. I have a question, which is, you held up your journal earlier. Mm-hmm. So is that something that you like to do, that you do every day, to journal?
Not every day.
Okay.
Sometimes. I notice my preference is about once or twice a week. I'll do what I call free writing, mm-hmm. where I write anything and everything. Because like you, I believe that writing begets writing, that really the way to overcome writer's block is to write anything and everything. And if you need guidance, that's what I have overcome writer's block for. So if you need a prompt, it doesn't really matter where you start. It matters that you start and that you write. And to learn how to allow anything and everything on the page. Emotions that are difficult. Thoughts that might be considered wrong or taboo. Or judgments. Horrible self-talk. We're not taught how to have really good self-talk in this culture or in the Western world. We're taught to be harsh and mean and rough and abrupt. And, well, put that on the page. It's okay. It's okay. Learn who you are inside. And I have done lots and lots of nonfiction, but I haven't done much creative nonfiction,
right.
Meaning using the tools of fiction to write about real things. I've done a tiny bit, but it doesn't really draw me that much. The nonfiction I have done is mostly teaching, inspirational, motivational, how-to stuff, and it's deep actually. I teach people how to create characters or how to write story or different aspects. There's tons of writes where I can really drill down into different aspects of fiction. Also marketing. I teach marketing for novelists, and so that is very tender and challenging. So I do a lot of essentially spiritual work in my nonfiction writing around coaching people to make friends with themselves, essentially.
Yes.
To become on a best friend relationship, you know, with themselves.
I definitely connect to that because what you're addressing, I feel is very much our society that it's, I know it's been talked about and, you know, it can be, people might think, oh, that's too new agey, but, really about loving yourself. And then it's sort of, where does that go into sort of ego or, you know, we need to find that healthy ego. But within that, going back to if we love ourselves, or let's say honor ourselves, can we then honor our creativity mm-hmm. and know that it's as important as going to get our hair done or you know, but really less trivial, but it's a nourishment. Mm-hmm. So it's as important as we're having food each, you know, eating food each day.
Right.
And you were reminding me earlier, talking about your earlier projects, and then also talking about when you have, you know, the sort of big, let's say famous creatives that many people in, say, the United States and even worldwide would be familiar with, like Beyonce and Madonna. And I think you had an important point, you know, if you do this incredible show or you release this amazing album, then what do you follow that up with? And it made me think about Elizabeth Gilbert and, you know, and her story really is that, you know, she was a writer for many years and she received, like most writers do, rejection after rejection after rejection. And I believe the same as it, when you're in that field of being an actor, mm-hmm. that you're going on these, you know, you're going for these auditions and they're saying no, 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 no. And one thing that Elizabeth Gilbert says in her book, she writes about, I'm not sure if you've read Big Magic, no, but that's her book on creativity. Mm-hmm. And one thing that she talks about is often it's about the timing. So, you know, you send off a piece, you know, she'd send something off and it was rejected. And she just sort of put it away, like, but it was this interesting story about being in the middle of nowhere. She was like in Montana being a chef, working in the kitchen of this ranch. And, you know, she was still writing, but she was like many writers. She had a day job. Yeah. And she, you know, she sent in this piece, it got rejected. And then she was like, oh, that's it. But one day she sort of goes through her files, she finds it again, she sends it off, I think, to the same publisher who basically had said, no, you know, thank you, but no, we're not really interested. And then this publisher wrote back and said, this piece is amazing and we love it and we want to publish it right now. And she double checked the old letter, which she still had. And she's like, this is the same publisher. And it's like the same story. I haven't changed anything. Mm-hmm. So it was inspiring. And I also think it's a really important note, like note to self, mm-hmm. that even if publishers are rejecting your work or, And it might just be that you've sent it to the local paper. And even with myself, people ask me if I'm published. And I would say, well, yes, I am published. I'm published in lyrics that I've written and published in essays on albums. But I have to say that even though I've been published, I'm incredibly nervous because I get self-critical that I am, you know, that I'm going to have to send my work out into the world. And so I have to reel it back in and say for that really who, bottom line, who I'm writing for, why I'm writing is for myself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then when I'm ready to take that out into the world. And it's sort of a step-by-step process. Yeah. And I, you know, so for a lot of viewers, for many viewers, mm-hmm. most people won't be published in terms of they haven't been published yet. Mm-hmm. And they might have that resistance, mm-hmm. like I have for sending out my work. And I'd like to give people sort of acknowledgement, first of all, acknowledging that they are writing. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not that they're writing every day, that they're writing. Yeah. And it's a form of their creativity, and that they acknowledge that they are a writer, and that they're acknowledging that by writing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I would love your words of wisdom for that, for our viewers, on rejection, and just the words of wisdom on to how you suggest of to keep writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good one. So to be clear with everyone, I am independently published. So I have gone and done it. So I have a young adult fantasy trilogy, 3 books. I have 5 romances. And like I said at the beginning, I have these 3 stories in science fiction mystery. So now a completely new genre and a 4th that I hope to produce and release, you know, soon at some point. Rejection. So I do experience rejection in a few different ways currently. 1, feedback from my critique partners. They are longtime professional writers like me who writing as part of their revenue stream in their life. They're not full-time big name authors, but they write and they publish. They're also independently published. They will give me back pages, notes, and they're like, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't understand this. And they're not mean. It can feel mean, but I know they're not mean. They truly are giving their honest opinion, no holds barred. And it's hard to hear. It's hard to hear. I don't like your heroine, they'll say. And I'm like, she's the core of my work. You don't like my heroine. So what I do is say thank you. So I don't argue. When people give you feedback on your work in these early stages, you say thank you. And I let it percolate. I let it sit. At first, I felt like, oh no, I have to fix her. I have to do something. I have to make her different. Because they're telling me, they're giving me suggestions. Make her different. Make her this. Make her that. Oh no, you can't have her say that. Can't have her do that. But I don't want to make any changes just yet. I need a cool head, and that takes a while. Because at first, I'm just all riled up. I feel sad. I feel ashamed. I feel angry. But I just say thank you, and I take notes. She said, you know, this one thought that, this one thought that. I have it put in my notebook and it's all on the pages they give me. And I just sit on it. And I actually switched to sharing them pages from a different book so that I could let that one rest, because I also realized I am sharing it with them too soon. I'm not yet neutral to the project. The project's not done. I'm writing a 4-book series.
Right.
I'm like, oh, I got to explore the whole world I'm writing. Then I will be more, then when I know what I have in front of me, their feedback, I can do something with it. I can say yes or no to it. So that's one area of rejection that I have to process ongoingly,
right.
You know, because we meet regularly. So I always have to process that, and I have to filter it. I have to go, well, I agree with you there. I disagree with you there. Right. But it's hard to do sometimes, and I've learned not to show work too soon.
Yeah.
It's when it's too painful, it's too soon. It's better that you sit on the work or polish it up, clean it up a bit more. Have a little bit more clarity about it. It's okay. You don't have to show it to anyone until you're ready. So I've figured that out for myself. Or sometimes I say to them, I just want big picture feedback to kind of mitigate too much picking at the work too soon.
Yeah.
And then the other place I experience rejection is bad reviews, which will happen. So if I see I have gotten a 3-star review or less, I get my husband to read it for me. I don't even read it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No reason. You can put a buffer there, have someone else read it, or don't even read it. There's some people don't read reviews. So he will read it, and he'll say, well, here's one useful thing, and he'll read it aloud to me. And only one time have I had a review that was mean, that felt very wrong. Other times reviews have been, I didn't really like it. And I can go, okay. You know, 2-star review, didn't like Henrietta? Okay. You know, like, that's okay. Lots of other people liked it, got a prize, you know. People read it and they're like, oh, it's on my keeper shelf. That's all I need. I just need to focus on the people who want to keep it on their shelf for their daughters as they grow older, and there it will be. that's who I wrote this book for. Well, for the women and for their daughters.
I love
I
love it. Actually, would you put up Henrietta again? And yeah, let's see Henrietta.
Henrietta the Dragon Slayer.
That's fabulous. And so when you said for people's daughters, would you say that's for a genre for teenagers or young adult, or that's young adult going into adult, I'm presuming?
Yeah, it's really for ages 12 and up.
12 and up.
So, I mean, it's written with the express desire for girls as young as 12 to read it, and it has the complexity of language to be for that level. I do know that most of my readers are women in their mid-40s, like I was when I first published the book. Yeah. You know, like, it's for women who are like, oh my God, I wish I had this when I was a girl. Oh, so that's been the response a lot. But I also, now that the trilogy is done,
yes, let's see the rest. Oh. Yeah. We've got to see them.
Oh, books are falling everywhere.
That's a writer. It's good to have books falling. Oh!
So this is Henrietta and the Dragonstone, the green one.
Okay.
And the red one is that's got post-its in it, is Henrietta and the Battle of the Horse Mesa.
Excellent.
And it has post-its in it because it's one of my early copies that I was marking up. And the books got progressively fatter. I don't know if people can see.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Which is very common.
Yes, that is so...
And it's a trilogy that has to be read in order.
Great. So viewers can find out more about you on your website.
Absolutely. BethBarani.com.
BethBarani.com. And we'll have a link to it as well.
Welcome. Good.
And then they can also find you on Amazon to buy your books and directly from you, I think.
Yes, I am now starting to sell my fiction directly through my author site. And my nonfiction, yeah, actually some of it can be purchased from you directly.
Okay. Oh. That's great to know. And then you're offering a free gift to our listeners. And we mentioned it at the beginning, but for people who have watch this all the way to the end, they'll get to hear about it again, and now they'll get an extra. And that's an ebook, so I'm not sure if you actually have a copy of it.
No, I don't, and that's I'm sorry for that.
No, yeah.
I haven't created a print edition yet, although I started to.
And can you tell us the name again?
Sure, it's Overcome Writer's Block.
Overcome Writer's Block, which is perfect for this series. Absolutely perfect. It's been amazing talking to you, and I can't believe how fast the time has gone.
I know.
We are just at an hour, I believe, and it's just gone. I don't know about you, but I feel like it's just gone so quickly because it's been really wonderful talking to you and learning more about you, your work, and your process of your work. And I personally have found it really inspiring, and I really believe that our viewers will find this very inspiring. And just, you know, I'd like to say, I, as a writer myself, my therapist, I'm just going to be totally transparent. I have a therapist, but she always says that I'm really good at being an extrovert for an introvert. And it helps me, I believe, as a writer to have that very introverted side. And it can at times be isolating. I'm not a writer that can go to a cafe. I have to be at home and quiet. So, and the reason I mentioned that is to have a video series like this where we really get to hear about the process of other writers, and especially, and I'm speaking for myself, if, you know, if I feel isolated, I can just go, okay, so how do other writers feel, and what is their process for creating? So I really appreciate your time today.
Well, you're so welcome. Well, thank you so much. And I really do believe in having a writing community.
Yeah.
That is what helped me be a committed novelist from the get-go. So I joined a group. I mean, right away.
Yes.
Right away. I realized two things. One, if I wanted to be committed, I had to do it. And number two, I had to join a group in person. And I've been a part of a group pretty much my whole career as a novelist, which has been 19 years. So that is in different forms with different people. It included meeting my husband. So I highly, highly recommend finding a community where you can be with like-minded people in person, and online is great too. Yeah. I wholeheartedly believe in online communities as well. I run one. So, and they both are so important.
And I wanted to mention that. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I believe that too. I facilitate a writing group and I write with my group. And I'm also looking at joining another group that's outside as well, so that I'm, you know, not facilitating at all. And I also would like you to share again, you did share at the beginning, but also the services that you do offer as a writer.
Absolutely. So I'm a creativity coach. That's my certification. And I also have a certification in, I'm a master NLP practitioner. And I wrap that into my specific services helping novelists. And I do that in a few separate ways. One is through presentations and webinar classes that people can either join online live or in person. And I also run a group coaching program that's a 12-month commitment for genre novelists who have completed their first draft and are looking now, like, what do I do now? And then in the interim, I also have an annual course that I run online called Plan Your Novel. And we do that in October. And it's a wonderful way for beginners who've never written a novel before to really start walking step by step into the planning process in a way that honors their style. It's very organic. It's very flexible. And yet it has structure. It's a container, allowing them to lay out the garden of their story that works for them. And then in November, people are invited to join us for a live support group while everyone is doing National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo. We run our own support group, a paid group that really nurtures in an intimate environment that writing process for new writers. And then if they're ready, they can come join our 12-month program for committed genre novelists.
It sounds so incredible that I was just thinking, okay, I'm putting that on my calendar. I need to join because I'm writing a novel, and that you need support. Yeah. I absolutely feel that you need support. And, you know, people have done it on their own. Mm-hmm. Sounds like, you know, you've done that on your own too, but it is, as I was mentioned about being that, you know, sort of isolated, it can feel isolating. Yeah. And to have that, and to have a community. And also that, especially when you're writing a novel, that there is a structure and there can be formulas. Mm-hmm. And to have someone like yourself, who's an experienced writer and an experienced coach. Right. And I believe that you can be an experienced coach because you are a writer, and it goes hand in hand.
Yeah. And I do happily carry the mantle of teacher. I taught English to foreigners here and abroad, and I feel like being a teacher is being a facilitator, is a guide. And to me, I'm very comfortable holding structure and inviting people to explore the material for themselves. I'm not telling people the right way. I'm telling them, you know,